and Condon.
Ken Miller. Trent Condon. Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO. And now on 106.3 FM.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Miller and Condon on a Wednesday. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Trent Condon and Ken Miller for the next couple of hours to talk sports with you. Thanks for tuning in here this morning. Here's what's coming up. We are on the BMW of Des Moines guest list. We are going to recap Iowa State and Iowa's press conferences from yesterday. We'll do so with Dave Sproul coming up from KASI, 1430 AM, and part of the Learfield broadcast. He'll join us at 10:30. David Eicholt from 24/7 Sports will be here, Hawkeye Insider. He'll join us at 11:05. And then with today being Wednesday, Wednesdays are for Mitch Holtis during the NFL season. He'll join us at 11:30 as the Kansas City Chiefs head out on the road to take on the winless Indianapolis Colts. So we'll talk to Mitch about that. Good morning, TC. How are you?
I'm not too bad. How about yourself?
Doing fine. Yeah. Spring in my step as we move into Wednesday here today. So a couple of things. I just realized this. I just saw a tweet. Today is Missouri Valley Conference media basketball days.
Isn't that wild? Yeah,
it's September.
I was texting yesterday with Layman.
And oh, he's
talking
there?
About that. Yeah, he's down there and getting ready for the start of the season. Said, we'll get you on soon. Probably not quite yet.
It's a tad early.
Just a tad early. What do you think the justification is, though, putting it this
early?
I
have no idea.
Late October, sure.
Right. But September.
I don't get it.
Yeah, we're football crazy. If they're trying to get a jump on things, give them a pat on the back for trying something different.
Right.
But we're going to talk football here today, and that's the extent of the media days in St. Louis for the Valley. We like the conference. We love the conference.
We do.
We pay very close attention to it because I think it's going to be a special year on Forest Avenue this year. We shall see. But lots of ground to cover before we get to that point. Got an NFL game coming up tomorrow. Have you looked at the slate of games this week in advance?
I have a little bit, yeah. I started doing a little bit of work last night. There were three college games that I fired at early in the week and one NFL game.
Which NFL game, if you can recall?
It was Baltimore at New England. Watched a little bit of the New England-Pittsburgh game. That Patriots team's not very good.
No,
they're good defensively. I shouldn't say they're not good. They're good defensively. They're really struggling offensively.
They're the third best team in that division, I think. I think it's Miami.
Are you sure they're third, not fourth?
Well, maybe, right? Wouldn't that be something if the Jets leapfrogged them? And I mean, it's not going to matter. They didn't want them to go in the playoffs. But the Patriots and Bill Belichick finishing last.
A nice 5-12.
Geesh. Does he walk away at that point?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. No. One thing, he wants to stay longer than Brady, and I'm convinced Brady will walk away.
But yeah, I jumped
so
on
what
Baltimore.
Was the number?
Three. A flat three. There were some 3.5s out there. I found a flat three, so I jumped on that. Right away with Baltimore. I think you're going to get the bounce back of Baltimore.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Lamar, it's lost because of the way the game obviously finished up.
It was unbelievable, Trent, and I couldn't agree with you more. Nobody's talking about that.
There was 1-3 and out, but even at that point, they're still at 14. Like, okay, he had 3 and out. You're going to kill him for that.
See that touchdown run?
He's playing at a high, high level. He's throwing the ball well, and he's got some dudes now.
He's got a weird release, but you know what? It's effective.
It absolutely is.
And for
is.
The most part, it's pretty accurate.
So, Rashad Bateman, of course, we remember from
gifted.
Minnesota. And that incredible season that they had up there in 2019. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to be a star. Hasn't clicked yet.
Still think he's going to be a star.
He's going to be good.
Uh-huh.
At the very least. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be out there.
He was a fantasy draft sleeper this year.
He was, absolutely. DuVernay, he's a guy that could definitely make plays. Now, he's dealing with a concussion, which is a little worrisome.
Well, didn't he score? Didn't he open the game with a touchdown?
It was early.
A kick. Yeah. I think it was...
And then he got Andrews. I mean, this offense, they
Andrews is one of the most underrated tight ends because there's just really good ones in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But he's clearly in every conversation as amongst the best in the game. I agree.
It was just such a weird game that if this Ravens team was 2-0, I think this thing would be more 4.5-5. Mm-hmm. They just wouldn't have had the collapse there. Still happened.
What's the game you're most looking forward to? Is there one game that just jumps off? I mean, Green Bay, Tampa, I get.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's that. Speaking of the AFC East, I think that's the game you got to watch. Buffalo and Miami. Is Miami
ready?
Well, that's the measuring stick. That's what this game is all about, to see if they are ready. Because teams that we thought were ready for Buffalo have been a complete wake-up call because they are blowing teams out.
And they're not playing perfect by any means.
No, but the thing is, it's a short week.
That's a good point. Uh-huh. And maybe that's just the little bit of nudge to make
and
this thing.
And it's going to be upper 80s, and the humidity is going to be through the roof, and this is a, air quote, cold weather team that's going into Miami. Not that they don't do it every year. They do. But you have to factor into the conditions. I think this one might be tight. So have you settled in on your survivor play this week?
So Vikings is what I had circled early.
And the Vikings are hosting whom?
The Lions. Now, it's a divisional matchup.
Detroit's better.
Still bad defensively. Uh-huh. It's at U.S. Bank.
Another short week. Speaking of short weeks, the Vikings coming off a short week.
The
where they
point
were embarrassed.
Spread has come down. It was a touchdown. Now it's down to 6. Mm-hmm. So we have some line movement there. That's where I zeroed in at this point for Survivor. How about you guys? Do you know where you're heading?
We have two, I think, that we're leaning towards. Kansas City at Indy. Indy's winless. Indy has been awful. Chiefs. Pretty good.
Yeah.
And another road team, the Bengals. I can't see them falling to 0-3. They take on the Jets in New York, well, New Jersey. But those are the two that we're kind of leaning towards. Both road teams. I don't know. It's a tough day. These next 2 weeks are incredibly
tough. They are,
yeah. This contest, we're talking about Survivor at Circa, and there's already there were 6,000 entries, roughly. Mm-hmm. There's 2,000 left after 2 weeks. Two-thirds of the people that wrote brought their $1,000 to sign up, they're out. It's remarkable.
That was the one thing that I was most worried about, is just being
out
because
early.
I only did one entry.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, I want to get through September.
Right.
And get that hope.
Badge of honor with one to get through there.
Hey, I've beat two-thirds of the field.
You have.
You don't get anything for that.
Nope.
There is only, well, you have to get to the end to be a champion.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the goofy rules and the 20 weeks with so many people in it, this thing's not going to end in week 18.
The consensus is it's going to end before that. That's what Palm thinks. Mike Palm thinks that we will not get to this point.
I don't think so. It's just, ultimately, luck of the draw, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have, look at some of the entries that go in, too. I mean, some of the teams that people pick, and people are picking the Bears last week. I saw one entry had that. It just, there's going to be some goofiness
and
randomness.
How about the 27 people last week that forgot to submit their pick?
Well, and week one was 21.
Yes.
That, I think you can understand a little bit more. Either you signed up a while ago.
Or you got too much damn money and you don't care.
Right. Signed up a while ago. Maybe you got a shady proxy. Something happened. You can understand week one. Week two, what are you doing?
Right. Unbelievable. Anyways, let's get to baseball from last night. Boy, I know you don't. I was going to say you feel for White Sox fans.
Nope, not at all.
No, I know you don't. But they kind of got a Twins feel because it felt like the Twins season ended this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And it felt like the White Sox season, man, the curtain's not completely down, but it's starting to fall, Trent. If they have any hope, or do they? Do they have a hope? Is there hope there for the White Sox, or did it end in the 11th inning last night at guaranteed rate?
It's over.
It feels like it does. They had to win. They got Cease on the bump. Mm-hmm. They got their guy, who didn't have great stuff last night.
You got a 3-1 lead.
Through. That's just it. Yeah, 3-0 lead, didn't? No, that was 3-1. You're 3-1. Right, 3-1. Because did you see how they scored the first run of the game?
No.
Pollock fell on his face in left field, and they scored it a triple. Now, it would have been a single, but literally, he tripped over his right foot, and anyways, that's how they got their first run.
Watched, was locked in the sixth inning as the White Sox were making that run. You could see how into it the fan base was.
Oh, it was really wild.
It was a good environment for a game. It had that playoff baseball feel to it. And then the bullpen again.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how good we thought this bullpen had a chance to be coming into the year? What a huge disappointment that's been. I know the White Sox have had injuries, and they've had their own set of issues because of that this year, and La Russa and everything that's gone around with him. But this bullpen has been one of the more disappointing units, I guess you'd have to say,
I think
in
that's
baseball.
Fair. I think it's fair. Josh Harrison, did you see either of his two plays defensively last night? Oh, my God. I'm not sure which one was better. I mean, the highlight reel is him diving through the air into shallow right field to catch a baseball.
There was that one camera angle that was just
remarkable. Yeah, boy, he made some plays last night. Good series, was pulling for the White Sox, wanted to see them get there because it looks as though there's only going to be now one of the regional, air quote, regional teams that make it to postseason.
Yeah, we don't count Cleveland.
No, we can't count Cleveland. No. We can barely count the White Sox because they're in Chicago.
And Milwaukee is a tough one, too.
Uh-huh.
Those ones are down
the
pecking order a little bit more.
It's a stretch.
And we'll see. Milwaukee's still with an outside chance.
Not growing up here, I think I know the answer to this, but why are, and it's probably WGN, right? I'd probably stop myself right now. Why are there so many more Cubs fans as opposed to White Sox? It's WGN.
That's a huge part of it. I think it's also, and not living in Chicago, I don't know. It's interesting, because I guess I don't have the Chicago background.
The Cubs games on here forever?
Yeah.
On the radio as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they've been on radio for a long time.
Well, they've been on radio since I moved here in 89, but I'm wondering way back.
Oh, yeah, I believe so. I think they've been a part here for a super long time, too. So that's a huge part of it. I told you before, the Twins used to be on WHO.
Uh-huh.
And that's why you have a pretty good pocket of mostly older Twins fans here in this market. But going back to the 60s and 70s, they were on WHO for a lot of those years.
I wonder what happened to that relationship.
I don't know. The Twins were so bad during the 80s until 87. Mm. And throughout most of the 70s, too, maybe it was just that.
So did HO, I guess we could ask somebody in the building since they are down the hall.
Right.
Did they relegate them because they wanted a, air quote, a better team? Or did they carry baseball?
Or maybe they just completely went away from
baseball. I think that's probably the case.
Yeah, they said maybe it doesn't make sense with the changing world and what we're doing. That very well could be the case. But it's so interesting the way that fan bases are. Well, you see it with the Braves. There's no reason anybody should be a Braves fan here.
No.
TBS.
Right.
It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And for people in my generation, not only the Braves, but the Braves becoming good then all of a sudden, they were so bad leading up until that run in 1991. It was just, flip it on and watch some awful baseball.
Oh, and they were terrible.
They were brutal.
But they had young guys. And I particularly remember one. He was a hockey player from Massachusetts, and he got his teeth kicked in every time he took them out, Tom Glavine. Uh-huh. But you could just see the progression of his career starting to turn around, and then they are what they are.
So looking at the White Sox mathematically, what you have to do, let's say they do get the last two games of the series. That gets them within three with 10 to go. Mm-hmm. At least the Cleveland will have 10 to go at that point.
Six of which are against the Royals.
Yeah, Cleveland remaining. This is what they have. You mentioned the Royals, so it's the Rangers on the road for three.
Yeah.
Three for the Rays, and then that six game.
Where are the Rays? Are the Rays in Cleveland,
that's
too?
That's at home. And then six at home against the Royals.
Trent, if they go .500, I would be surprised. Because I think they'll be better than .500.
So to catch them in the standings, that means the White Sox would have to go 8-2.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, they have to be better than that because Cleveland has the tiebreaker.
Right. There is no game 163 this year.
Which, doesn't that stink?
Yeah, but it goes back to us, Major League Baseball starting the season late.
Is that forever, though? Or is that just a...
I hope not, Trent. I hope
there's
not.
There's so many memorable moments in game 163.
It's a special day, right? Monday or Tuesday after the regular season ends on Sunday. Now it ends on Wednesday this year because of the lost weekend back in the labor negotiations. Yeah, I'm with you. Those are some memorable nights. Mm-hmm. Really are.
And for that to go away,
you want that back, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do want it back. So Cleveland would have to go, if they go .500.
And the White Sox actually, I believe,
they got to win. Who's the White Sox? What are the White Sox?
I know there's a bunch against the Twins, which will help because that team has packed it in. It's over for them. And our bet... Over 78.5.
It's not looking good.
We're in trouble.
And I thought it was home free. Here's what they've got. They've got, we know about Cleveland, the next two. Mm-hmm. And then they host Detroit for three.
Okay.
They go to Minneapolis for three. Mm-hmm. San Diego on the road for three before coming home to face the Twins.
So they have 12 games remaining as opposed to the 10 remaining for Cleveland. 10-2.
And to .500 gets you in. I can't see it.
I can't either.
I think the Twins will find a way to win a couple of games.
What do you think the betting odds are right now? I mean, you're laying...
To what? To win the Central?
To win the division.
Oh, it's got to be huge.
You would think
massive.
So, right? We'll see if it's available right now, if they've updated it. Here we go. Divisions. This is at Circa right now. To win the American League Central. You can get the White Sox at 12-1. Or the no, -2,000. Meaning bet at 2,000 to win $100.
No, thanks.
I'm good. How about the Twins at 600-1?
They 600-1. Trent, last Friday, they were still... They had a pulse.
They had a pulse. If you're going to bet the Guardians, you have to lay -2,000. The no is 12-1. So basically the inverse of what the White Sox are.
So of the three seeds in the National League and in the American League, because St. Louis is going to hold that distinction in the National League, Do you which of those two do you like better? Which of the two three seeds, Cleveland or St. Louis, has a chance to go further in their respective league?
I there's something about this Cleveland team that I just wonder. They'll get the Yankees. Judge has been a great story.
And it was again last night.
But this has been a very average team for a very long time now. And those great stories of the first half have not continued in the same fashion.
That's true.
The easy answer is St. Louis, right? Maybe it's we've seen it before, but they're just something tricky. I have a if Cleveland gets past the wild card round against the sixth seed, I have a sneaking suspicion that I'm going to put a couple of bucks on them.
I thought
to
the
win
same
the
thing last night. What are to win the World Series or win the American League?
To win the division, the series against the Yankees, which they'll probably be about plus 180. Maybe 2-1, something like that. I'll probably take a stab at that. Well, speaking of that, to win the pennant, let's go American League pennant winners here from Circa.
Houston has to be favored.
They have it listed, not alphabetically, plus 145 for the Astros to win the American League. The Yankees plus 250 are the second choice. You can get the Mariners at plus 850. I'd like to be that double digits before I start to dabble into that one. Guardians plus 1550. Worth the stab, maybe. White Sox 85-1. They get in.
It's all they have to do, Trent, is get in. They're not getting in.
The Rays are also plus 850. So that's what you have to win to get to the World Series, win the American League.
You did mention Toronto.
Toronto. They are plus 685.
Got a chance.
I got a future ticket on them, I think, at 8-1 to win the American League and a World Series at like 14-1. Don't need to dabble anymore.
I don't think you do. They got a chance. They got, as we know, they got an incredibly strong lineup. All right, over in the National League, there's really, I mean, what's left in the National League?
Fighting for that wild card spot, right?
Well, I guess, but... It's
2.5 back right now are the Brew Crew.
And they had that's a bad loss for them yesterday because they had the Mets on the ropes.
And the Phillies are going the wrong way. They've lost 5 in a row. My overbet of 83.5, I'm nervous about suddenly with the Phillies.
Well, they're at 80, so you should
be, but you got to win games. They lost 5 in a row. And the Padres are a game and a half up of the Phillies for the other wild card
Padres
slider.
Are getting in.
Yeah, I think they're in really good shape there. So I guess that's a little bit of the intrigue, but we don't have any series that are
going to...
Are we going to go the final weekend with everything wrapped up?
Maybe Mets Braves to determine the East.
That's true. Yep, that's a good one. And what, currently a game?
Game and a half.
Okay, let's see here. Mets are up a game.
Game, yes. Yeah. Yep.
Full game in the standings, though the Mets have played two more games, so they are tied in the loss column.
That's the race.
I ask you this every year when we're talking about the pennants. We hear it all the time. The all-important loss column. Why is the loss column more important than the win column?
I don't know.
Is there something mathematically?
No. Because a game's a game, right?
Right.
You're going to win or you're going to lose it. But they do talk about the loss column.
What,
can Maybe somebody it's just a measure, measuring stick. I don't know the answer, but that's... It's funny you mention that. I never ever thought about that because that's been said forever.
The all-important loss column.
Since I started following the game.
Well, that just means the other team's got more games.
Yeah.
They have a game or two games or whatever it is, and they could still win those games. Why isn't it the all-important win column?
Yeah, fair question. Real quick, from the press conferences yesterday, we're going to talk to Dave Sproul here in 10 minutes. David Eicholt will kick off the second hour on the Hawkeyes. What's going on with Keegan Johnson? Something's up here.
Hurt again.
Yeah, is he?
You wonder.
Right?
There's a lot of questions here. Didn't practice since going back to bull prep. Didn't go through spring practice. We had the fake picture in August of him practicing when he wasn't really practicing. Hamstring injuries are finicky, I get
that. Yeah, I'm with you. Got in early in the game until the first delay.
We heard rumblings about possibility of a sports hernia or something abdominally. Okay, he's had injuries. This is just odd. And did you read through the transcript? I think this is going to give you a little peek into exactly that there might be something else going on. It was, I believe, the first question.
That Ferentz had to answer?
Yes, I think it was the first one of the day. Let me go back and find the transcript. Here it is. So, yeah, he goes through with his opening statements. Yeah, first question. What's the latest on Keegan Johnson? Saw him in action but didn't see him on the depth chart. Kirk says, yeah, we pulled him out somewhere around the 34th, 35th play. It's a nagging injury and there's nothing to say right now. We'll take it a day at a time. Follow up, is he available for Saturday? I don't think so. He hasn't practiced yet this week, so we'll see. It's just day to day. Very short, very concise. Kirk didn't want to say much.
Nope.
What do we read into that? Is this, the rumblings have been that Keegan, they believe he can practice.
And Keegan doesn't believe he can practice? Boy, that's a slippery slope right there. You cannot get into a kid's head like that.
Right. That is at least some of the rumblings that have been out there. I don't know the validity of them, but that's something, at least on the surface, would make sense, though.
Well, it couldn't be that he's disappointed because he had every opportunity to transfer.
Right, exactly. He had a full summer.
Right.
He saw Charlie Jones do it
after
spring practice. So it's not that, you wouldn't think. And hearing his roommates and his teammates and talk about it, he wants to be out there. But if he's not confident in that hamstring and being able to push off and make cuts and those kind of things, because he didn't look great, I didn't think, on Saturday night, even when he was out there. He looked a little tentative. He didn't look like certainly the Keegan Johnson we saw a year ago. That would make sense, that he's not confident enough right now health-wise to give it a full go. The coaches say, hey, trainers say you're okay. You know, our medical staff says you're okay. We got to go. You got to practice. Can't just go out there on Saturday. You wonder if that's what it is. Again, this is all speculation, nothing definitive, but that at least in my mind would make the most sense.
Yeah, but if the kid says, you know, I'm not there, it's
tough, right?
I'm not 100%. I'm not anywhere close to being that. I don't feel like I'm football ready.
Right.
You know, since we're talking injuries, I got to give Matt Campbell credit.
Oh, yeah?
Because he has been, up until this point, as guarded as any as paranoid as any coach has been that we can recall here. But he's kind of showing a little transparency this year.
Yeah.
When it comes to these injuries.
More than normal, certainly.
Way more than normal.
Yes, not even close.
This is a new leaf, for crying out loud. I mean, he declared Darren Wilson out, but has said that Frehler and Stanley are both going to play. You know, we've heard the Remsburg, the day-to-day type of thing, but he might get in. Campbell is at least given us a little bit of what's going on as far as the walk. I don't need to know what it is. You know, I don't. What's the chance you can just don't fib? Just offer a little bit of transparency. If you don't want to say it's his leg, don't say it's his leg or his shoulder or whatever.
But if he's out, tell us he's out.
Right.
If he's questionable, we heard about the injury report with Delaney.
I mean, Aranda's not
5 years ago now?
Yes, at Big Ten Media Day.
Yeah.
Aranda's not sitting in Waco just waiting on pins and needles for the announcement. Nobody is.
Yeah. But he said that Darren Wilson's not available this week.
Not going to play.
Is that as, I mean, compact of a statement we've heard on an injury in 7 years
from
of Matt
him?
Campbell? Yeah.
From him. I think it's great. Look, they've got the Cyclone Television Network. Show the spring game.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Show something. Anyways.
But what a huge step forward. Having not just Cartavius Norton,
this kid play.
But Jay Remsburg is going to be available, it looks like, this week. And what a big step forward. Triber has improved from where he was week one to what we saw last week.
But he wasn't going to start had Remsburg been available.
And now you have that flexibility.
A little depth.
And the other thing with Triber and the improvements we've seen out of him is you don't have to say Remsburg, all right, you got to play 75 snaps this week.
Precisely.
You can play 35.
Yep.
We're going to give you three series a half, whatever it turns out to be, and he can kind of come up with a game plan to ease him back into action. And if you see right away also that he doesn't have it, he's not quite ready,
right?
Plug him back to Triber.
And with confidence.
Absolutely.
Because did you not say he graded out very well?
Yeah, I think he was first or second out of the offensive lineman last week.
This just in? They were going up against a pretty salty defense last week or 2 weeks ago. He's had some. He's been indoctrinated to that offensive line. I think he's held his own. But you're right. I mean, Remsburg is going to be the guy. All right, Dave Sproul's going to be the guy to talk more about this Iowa State Baylor matchup that's coming up this weekend. Boy, this feels like a big spot, doesn't it?
It's a huge.
It really does. Feels like, as we've both speculated, the Big 12 is going to be such a crapshoot. There's going to be so much parity. We think until we saw Oklahoma just open up a can on Nebraska.
If Iowa State wins this game to go to 4-0, obviously 8 games remaining on the schedule, I put the win total the rest of the season, then the remaining 8 games of the year.
Hang on, let me get it in front of me.
All right.
Let me get it in front of me here.
For the listeners, it's at Kansas.
All right.
Kansas State.
Tougher than you think.
Yeah, absolutely. K-State at Texas.
By the way, K-State gets Oklahoma this weekend.
Prime time
in Norman, correct?
Is that where it is?
I think it is, yes.
I think K-State's got a little something. That's one of the early bets I made this week. I think they're going to bounce back in a big-time way. At Texas, bye week before Oklahoma, home for West Virginia, at Okie State, Texas Tech, TCU. If I put the over-under at 4.5 in those remaining 8 games, where would you be? A 4-0 Iowa State team.
Well, I think they're going to win. I think they'll beat West Virginia at home.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they'll beat Texas Tech at home.
Mm-hmm.
TCU, Okay, I'll give him that one.
Yep.
So then can I find two more if I want the over? At Oklahoma State, home to Oklahoma, K-State, Kansas, working backwards. Yeah, I think they go over.
I think so, too.
There's... How about this?
Well,
what does that do, if indeed that is the case?
What, you get to 9-3?
Does that get you to Dallas 9-3?
I think it does. I think you get a rematch with Oklahoma.
I think you're going to be...
Or certain, Oklahoma State.
If nothing else, we're going to be trying to pull our hair out and figure out the tiebreakers.
You got that thing ready to go?
We'll soon. Good for them. The guys that they've developed to replace that talent that graduated, number them to the NFL. Brock Purdy's number two on the depth chart, by the way.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy.
I've been waiting for what veteran's going to be signed.
Well, and they had a bunch of them in yesterday, a bunch of no-names. What's the bald kid that was, he played at Oregon State, Mike Glennon.
Oh, jeez.
Mike Glennon's the most, I was going to say decorated, because at least he's had some starts in the league.
Isn't Mike Glennon Virginia Tech?
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But he's bald and he's 6-something.
And he's got the longest neck in the league.
Yes. But he's the most decorated of the guys they had in yesterday. And there was like a half a dozen of them.
Just roll with Purdy if that's going to be the case.
I think you do. I would have lost a big bet there. I didn't think he'd ever throw a pass in the NFL. He hasn't yet. But he's certainly trending in that direction, man. Good for him.
Helmet comes off.
Oof.
Trot in there, Brock.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Dave Sproul will join us on Iowa State. We'll take a look at Iowa State and Baylor. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll do likewise with David Eicholt, who covers the Hawkeyes, Kirk Ferentz, and his numerous players met yesterday with the media. And then Mitch Holthus on the Colts and the Chiefs. He's coming up at 11:30, Trent's Play of the Day. Circus Sports sponsors. It's Miller and Condon. We're on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.800.
That's all.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back to Miller and Condon on 106.3 KXNO. Here's Ken and Trent.
All right, 10:35 on a Wednesday. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. We take you up until noon. David Eicholt on Iowa. He'll recap their press conference from yesterday, players and Kirk Ferentz. And then Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Chiefs at 11:30. Dave Sproul was in Ames yesterday. Well, he's always in Ames. Well, not always. He's there a lot.
Yeah, sometimes it's Marshalltown or Waterloo.
Right, he moves around Friday nights.
Or Dodge.
He's headed on the road with the Clones and the football team. But you get my point. And he was at the football complex yesterday when Matt Campbell met the meet, as well as a number of players. Hello, Dave Sproul. How are you? Oh, I better click this, Dave Sproul. Hang on. How are you, Dave Sproul?
Hey, good to hear from you guys. I think pretty much always in Ames is kind of a good way to describe my life. That's all right.
Indeed it is, absolutely. So what did you learn yesterday? I'm learning more and more about Matt Campbell kind of turning over a new leaf when it comes to at least giving you a glimpse of what's going on health-wise with the team. I don't need to know what the injury is. You want to say lower body or upper body, that's fine. But I think there needs to be more in transparent, not just from him, by the way, throughout college athletics, because after all, you're betting on these games legally now, and I wish there was more transparency. And Campbell seems to be, and I don't think it's betting that's behind it, I'm not insinuating that it is, but it seems like he's more willing to at least give you a little bit of a glimpse into what's going on.
Yeah, I was a little bit taken aback at the end of the news conference yesterday when he was asked about injuries, and he was pretty forthright about who's going to play and who won't. Darren Wilson, not going to play Saturday. But Dimitri Stanley's going to be back, and it looks like Jake Remsburg and Cartavius Norton and Bo Freeler are all going to be back, and that's obviously good news for the Cyclones. And I don't know if this is a new leaf, if this is something that we could expect from Matt Campbell in the future when it comes to, you know, being a little more forthright about injuries, but I certainly appreciate it.
A season ago, Baylor, of course, goes on to win the Big 12 championship, but that was a game that feels like they let slip away. Mm-hmm. The first half of that game, the adjustments were great, as they usually are under Haycock, but the first half of that one, it was such an interesting game. Payback, maybe it's overrated, I don't know, but it just looking back at that game a season ago, it felt like they should have won that football game down in Waco.
Well, it kind of set the template for a lot of road games last year. It felt like Baylor, Texas Tech, West Virginia all kind of played out the same way, where Iowa State got down early, fought back into it in the second half. The defense, you know, really clamped down in the second half, as they seem to always do, and that the offense figured something out in the second half and got back into the game, but came up short at the end. And that's the thing you need to avoid when you are or want to be a Big 12 contender, is you need to be the team that gets out in front early and controls the pace of the game and the flow and all that. Of course, they didn't do that against Iowa, but that's a whole different, that series is its own thing. So we won't transpose that into the future. But, you know, if you want to win games, you got to get out to good starts, especially against good teams. And Baylor's a really good team. And, you know, I was watching their game from last week with Texas State, which, I don't know how instructive it really is, but I was impressed with the way Blake Shapen throws the ball, and it's not no wonder they named him starter back in the spring, and they got some good running backs, and they got some tough guys on defense, so it's going to be a really good matchup this Saturday.
It is, and one of those running backs, I believe, is a true freshman in Reese, who is really tearing up the league so far and opening eyes in his first opportunity. So the quarterback's not going to move around, right, Dave? I mean, Shapen is a kind of a pocket passer. You don't expect him to be, you know, a guy that you got to put a spy on, because you know at any minute he can, you know, tuck the ball and go pick up the first down. That's not the way he plays the game. When Campbell was asked about this Baylor team, what were a couple of the areas that he highlighted as far as what the Bears are doing?
The first thing he mentioned was speed. From sideline to sideline, basically at every position, he's impressed with speed overall. And I got to tell you, I think Shapen can run. He showed some wheels. He had a really nice, he had a long touchdown run on a really nice play. They'd been hammering the running back you mentioned, Reese, and he had a big game. And they ran a zone read, and Shapen stuck it in his gut and pulled it out, fooled everybody, the cameramen, the announcers, the whole stadium, basically, and had a free lane. And then once he got that lane, he really jetted down the field. And so he didn't obviously run a lot, but if he gets out in the space, he could probably hurt you a little bit. And they got guys, you know, in the backfield. Reese had the big game against Texas State, but they also have, you know, Craig Williams, they call him Squirrel. They got Tate McWilliams, who I don't believe played, and I'm not sure what his status is going into this week for Baylor. But they got some options there running back, and I think that's going to be the primary, you know, offensive thrust for them is just pound it home with that running game and then set up some play action passes, get the ball downfield with Shapen's arm.
That offensive line is really good, returned a lot from a season ago, and they're playing at a high level. Three of their top five offensive players right now from Pro Football Focus are along that offensive line. It's going to be certainly the most stern test for a lot of these newbies up front along that front six, front seven for Iowa State. How ready to go do you think they are going up? Probably pretty big step up in competition here, that offensive front from Baylor.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to be ready on that defensive line for Iowa State. I mean, we got Will McDonald there. Look at his chops and trying to get to that Big 12 career sack record. You know, he's going to be bringing it. MJ Anderson has really emerged, the transfer from Minnesota, who had a really nice game last week against Ohio. And we've seen some good stuff out of Isaiah Lee. And, you know, you got some depth there with the freshman and Dominique Orange and Howard Brown. So Iowa State's got some dudes up there, and it's just the nature of being an lineman, whether you're on the offensive or defensive line. These guys, more than most, I think, even tend to embrace that challenge of trying to be the more physical, stronger player than the guy across from you. And it makes for a really fun matchup.
So non-conference season is behind us. They got through it unscathed. Where are they better than you thought they were going to be? I mean, maybe the easy answer is offensive line, who looks like it's I mean, he's got a chance to maybe be his best offensive line since he's been here so far. Is that the easy answer, where they've been better than most thought that they would be after a 3-0 start here?
It's a good answer. Maybe it is easy, but maybe it's easy because it's a good answer, and they have been solid up front so far. And certainly, you know, you watch the way they played against Iowa, and especially that 99-yard touchdown drive where they just kind of imposed their will there, and that's pretty good indication of what they can do, and will only get stronger if/when Jake Remsburg returns. I think for me, the defensive backfield maybe has been a little bit better than I expected, as You got Anthony Johnson moving positions. You knew he was going to be good no matter where he plays. But that left, you know, four cornerback spots with no returning starter, and you had a bunch of guys. Well, you didn't, I mean, Tampa and Kyle had some starting experience, but you didn't have anyone quite on Anthony Johnson's level. But Miles Purchase has really stepped up.
Yeah,
Aaron Porter's done some good things. You know, you got TJ Tampa and Tavon Kyle back there too. And so that kind of that four player rotation at the cornerback slot is, I think, worked out better than expected for Iowa State. I know their coaches were feeling pretty good about it, but coaches always feel good about their position group. So you don't really know until you see them on the field. And I've been impressed by what I've seen from the defensive backfield overall and the cornerbacks in particular.
So special teams could have come up in a big negative way, of course, in the game against Iowa, two punt blocks. Where are we at right now, special teams ways with this Iowa State team? It's been something of a bugaboo for the program under Matt Campbell. Where do they think they are in a game that certainly looks like a coin flip type of game against Baylor? Very well could come down to special teams.
Yeah, when the question came up yesterday for Campbell, he kind of just pointed to the youth of the team. I mean, the place kicker, the punter, they're the guy. They're very young. I'm not sure if that completely answers the question, though, because Connor Guest, the long snapper, has been around for a while. But some of these other guys, I mean, they're not shy about putting good players, you know, starter players on the special teams to try to shore that up. But they've still given up a couple of punt blocks and a field goal block. So there's still some work to do there. I found it interesting last week when looking back at the punt blocks against Iowa, Matt Campbell basically blamed execution, which is kind of like saying a diplomatic way of saying it's players' fault. I don't think he wants to pile on those guys, but he said, we feel good about the scheme. We feel good about the game plan. We just got to execute better. Well, that to me says the players got to do their job. And it's okay to say that once in a while. I mean, it kind of, if you say it the wrong way, it sounds like you're throwing your guys under the bus, but the way he said it, it's like, yeah, you got to execute. You got to get the job. You got to block better. And I think that's what comes down to it, those blocked kicks so far. It's just a matter of blocking better, executing better to get that job done and prevent a potentially disastrous situation in the special team.
Were you surprised that that both of the backup quarterbacks had playing time? That they find a way, yeah, Beck came in, but Ashton Cook at the end was able to come in and, you know, get his first experience.
Maybe a little bit surprised just because the change, I thought, maybe kind of came a little later than I would have expected with Hunter Decker sticking through about halfway through the fourth quarter, I think it was. But Rocco Becht was able to get out there for a couple of series, and Ashton Cook, and I'm sure they wanted to get Cook in at some point just to get some game film on him and evaluate how he performed. And I thought he performed pretty well. That competition between Becht and Cook might be maybe closer than I thought for the backup slot, just based on the fact that they went with Becht in the opener as the mop-up guy, and they went to him first again against Ohio. But they got Cook in there, and he throws a pretty nice ball, as does Becht. Becht hasn't completed a pass yet, but that's not entirely his fault because some circumstances haven't worked out for him in that regard. But both those guys can sling it a little bit, and if Decker's would go down, I would imagine Becht would be the first guy off the bench still. But you know, Cook showed that he can do some things. He's got a little bit bigger frame than Becht, and maybe that works to his advantage in some ways as well. So we'll wait to see exactly. And you know, if you're an Iowa State fan, you don't hope to see it in a situation where Decker is maybe hurt. But it would be interesting to see if they get into a situation where it's a blowout, or if there's a situation where Decker has to come out of the game. Who goes in there? I would imagine to be Becht initially, but at this point now, I wouldn't be totally surprised if it's Cook.
You ready to get a condo in Sci-Town? What can you tell us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure rent on those will be really affordable.
Right.
So the deal is with that, this whole Sci-Town development that got rolled out really in earnest this week. I mean, it was introduced about 3 years ago initially. But, yeah, there's a residential component. They call them Sci-Town Suites. They got one- and two-bedroom apartments. You got to make a donation first.
Really?
The opportunity. Then you have to sign a 10-year lease.
Oh, my God.
I don't have that in the budget right now, so I'm going to take a pass. But that is a big source of revenue
Holy
they're counting
mackerel.
On. Yeah, when it comes to that whole project.
So let me get this straight. In order to rent a place there, you've got to make a donation to the athletic department. Then you have to sign not a 1-year lease, but a 10-year lease? I've never heard of such a thing.
But on the, you know, the upside is utilities are included. It's fully furnished.
Well, there you go.
You got that going for you. I guess that maybe offsets some of the cost. Yeah, this was not designed for rank and file folks here.
Well, it looks like it's going to be really cool when it's done. I mean, if it comes close to living up to the drawings, I understand why they're excited over there.
I did talk to somebody in the construction industry the other day, and they mentioned...
Are they building Southeast Polk Stadium?
They mentioned that $200 million price tag that was put there that is a little bit low for everything that is in the renderings, yes.
Well, the $200 million number is their projected revenue from a combination of what they'll collect in terms of leases and rents and all that and donations. So it's about 75% of that. And this is spread out. This is $200 million across 20 years. So we're talking about $10 million a year. And it's 75% of that comes from the leases and the rentals and all that. And the other quarter comes from donations and other fundraising. So I don't know. I'm no expert on these things. I'm sure they wouldn't come out here with it in this full, you know, full court press, so to speak, for this project if they didn't feel confident that they were going to reach that benchmark.
When will it all be done, Dave? Any idea? When would they like it to be, you know, fully functional, that there's everything's open, not, you know, pardon our dust type of thing. They're ready to go.
Yeah. The optimistic projection is that the parking lot area that needs to be redone first, along with some infrastructure utility upgrades in that area to accommodate that construction, will be into summer 2024 before that's done. It could even go into 2025 before that is completed, depending on how all that plays out. But Jamie Pollard, I think it was mentioned in the press conference Monday, that you should see buildings at least start to go up during the 2025 year. And so I imagine by fall of 2025, you'll be able to at least go to some kind of space gathering, would it be gathering space or a bar restaurant or something along those lines. You'll see the first thing they want to get done is the medical component. So maybe that would be the first thing you see get done there when it comes to at the latest fall of 2025, if everything goes according to plan.
Certainly an ambitious project. Anxious to see how it comes to fruition. Dave Sproul, thanks for that. Appreciate it as always. We will talk with you next week, Dave. Thanks for doing this.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Good to hear from you. Dave Sproul, 1430 KASI and part of the Learfield Network. 10-year lease.
10-year lease.
Wonder what do they ding you a month on top of that?
That's a great question. It's not going to be cheap. A couple grand?
Oh, I would say maybe north of that.
Now, probably. Fully furnished, ready to go. So retirees?
Yeah, but if you're true, but if you've got that much money to do you want it fully furnished? Don't you want your own stuff?
No, that's a good point too. Yeah. Maybe it's just your place during
football season?
Well, here's the thing. It's not like, you know, the snowbirds. You want to be there during football and basketball season.
Right.
Are we going to have inverse snowbirds?
That come here?
Right. And then they go to Toronto for the summer? I mean, what's going on?
Anyways, well, good. And glad we brought that up because we haven't really spoke about that at all, but it's a big project. Mm-hmm. We'll take a time out. We'll come back. We're going to talk Iowa to kick off hour number two with David Eicholt, Kansas City Chiefs. Mitch Holtis joins us every Wednesday. He's here at 11:30. It's Miller and Condon. We're on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.800
Bets Off.
Final couple of minutes here, first hour. We're here until noon. Real quick, Trent, since we haven't spoken about this, it is your favorite sport. It's college basketball. And the news that the NBA is about to be done with the one-and-done requirement, that kids are going to be able to go straight from high school into the NBA, what does that do to you?
Hopefully it continues to improve the sport. You know, the guys that really have no intention of being there, weed them out.
Do you want them gone, the one-and-doners? I don't think it's hurt. I really don't.
No. And college basketball is evolving in a way where you see the Oscar Tshiebwes of the world.
Because of the money.
Sticking around.
Mm-hmm.
Look at North Carolina and what they have returning.
Mm-hmm.
You have these elements now for those fringe guys who go off, make a go of it in the G League and make $50,000, go overseas, make some money, or...
Stay in school and make six figures.
Stay in a place that you probably really enjoy.
Right.
Make good money.
Uh-huh.
And play basketball where you're seen on ESPN, when you're seen on Vox, and you're
instead of being the 12th man at the end of the bench.
Right. It's not a bad deal.
And that's not the case for all of them.
Absolutely not. But I think college basketball is evolving in a positive direction because of NIL. I think NIL might help the sport in a way because those guys stick around. Luka Garza, if NIL was firmly in place, would he have stuck around for another year?
Yes, I'm convinced he would have.
Caitlin Clark, she's going to get a fifth year if she wants because of the COVID year.
Mm-hmm.
She's making good money, I'm going to assume, with Hy-Vee and her other endorsements. Do you get her for 5 years? It's good for the fans.
Yeah, it's great for college basketball.
Right.
Great for college basketball.
I think you can definitely talk this into being a positive thing. The guys that don't want to be there don't have to anymore.
All right, go to the league.
Go to the league. Give your shot. And there's other avenues that you can go now with the two G League teams that they have with Ignite.
Ignite, yeah.
Yeah. You can go that direction.
You know what it does hurt? There'll be one class that the kids that have to stay in school for a year, whatever that is, 23, 24, whatever it is, they're going to come out. That's going to be their draft year, but it's going to change. So the high schoolers can be part of that draft too.
It's going to be a stacked draft.
Oh my gosh.
You get 2 years of it. They'll be all right though. They'll be all right. Just as long as that dope down in the SEC, why can't I think of the commissioner's name? Sankey. You know, he's been flirting around about changing the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I know he has.
Yes. Knock it off.
He's serious about this, too.
Knock it off.
Yeah, don't mess with that.
No.
Don't mess with that. Find something else to mess with.
Yes.
This is perfect.
Use your power in the college football playoff. Do what you want there. Leave the NCAA basketball tournament alone.
Hour two coming up. We're going to start with David Eichold, Hawkeye Insider, part of 24/7 Sports. Mitch Holtis on the Chiefs. He's here at 11:30. Miller and Condon, we're here until noon on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3.